Hey, welcome into a bonus episode of Texans on Tap. I'm Brandon Strange, joined by Charlie Palillo. Josh escaped the bad weather, so he'll be back next week. We want to thank those who watched or listened to our draft coverage last week. That was a whole lot of fun. Dust has settled. Let's take a step back and see where the Texans are at and where they're at in the AFC South in the wake of the draft. One of the criticisms that I've heard about this draft is that their second and third round picks specifically were really just depth guys. That's what I've heard people say. In fact, one of the CBS sports analysts said Texans gorged themselves in free agency and trade. So the draft was really just about the bread and salad to a good meal. Do you agree with that assessment? Was there a glaring need that you think wasn't addressed by Caserio in the draft?
Well, quickly first, when you asked if I could fill in with Josh out of pocket, I figured I'd work in the quick little homage there.
I like that hat.
The Texans being more of a have than a have not, you know, worm turned very, very much in 1 year's time. Yeah. So they didn't have these gaping holes all over the board. Now, I don't think it meant that they were luxury buying and going for just the expensive accoutrement, you know, that Nick Caserio could be frivolous with his draft choices. And I don't think he was. But relative to just a year ago or any time over the last 3 years, they have a varsity roster now where they were the JV team or maybe even the freshman team. So it was an unglamorous draft. Well, when you don't have a first round pick, that's going to deglamorize things immediately. I thought going in, when you looked at their depth chart, secondary in order of priority for me, corner, safety, that's the order in which they took defensive backs. And they absolutely were one lineman short of what you'd say is a starting five that you're just very solid with. And they go O-lineman with the second pick they had in the second round. So Lassiter, and as we've discussed previously, and certainly it's out there for everyone, he's not going to make any Olympic 4x100 relay teams. Right? 4.6-ish is slow for a corner, but he's not going to be asked to be your number one shut down outside corner, go all over the field with the other team's number one receiver. The Texans want to do that. That's why Derek Stingley Jr. was the third pick in the whole draft. Mm-hmm. But Lassiter, if he's a slot corner, well, that's not where they had someone you were saying, okay, they're all set at that position. And they have healthier competition now. I think Jeff Okuda and CJ Henderson, two of the bargain buy former top 10 overall draft picks, they probably compete for that outside corner spot. And if it turns out Lassiter's better than both of them and they want him more on it, okay, fine. But options are good for D'Amico Ryans and the defensive staff to work with. Flip it to the offensive side. Now I think it's kind of a three-man battle. Right? You know Tunsil is the left tackle. You know Juice Scruggs, I'm not saying that he's a made man, but a second-round draft pick a year ago, injury-ravaged rookie season. But he gets full run as their center now. Shaq Mason is clearly the right guard for another year. So that leaves left guard, right tackle. Tytus Howard's being paid big right tackle money. Played guard, not to particularly favorable reviews, not his preferred position. So what they'll have to work through on the offensive side is you want your five best linemen on the field. Are they better served with Howard at right tackle if Fisher is suitable for guard after having played 2 years as a full-time starting tackle at Notre Dame, or maybe Fisher can go inside. So I don't think they were, reach picks or you took guys who are never going to be on the field. Right? The ultimate example of that in this draft was Michael Penix to Atlanta. They may love the guy, but their hope, frankly, is he never plays. Right? Having just signed Kirk Cousins to 4 years, $180 million. Lassiter absolutely is going to get regular run unless he gets hurt or is a flop. Fisher, at least at bare minimum, is a rotation guy who should vault ahead of Charlie Heck, I think, as their third tackle. And how good the players turn out to be determined. So was there a lot of glitz and ooh and ah with any of these picks? No, but that's a function in part of where they were selecting in this draft.
Houston added Mixon and a couple of tackles in the draft, as you mentioned. let's talk about that run game, because it was underwhelming for the most part last season, with, you know, exception of a few games here and there for Motor. Do you think the Texans have done enough to see an improvement in the run game by adding Mixon and those tackles? And how much do you think the addition of Diggs plus the return of Tank Dell will create softer boxes for Mixon and Pierce to run against?
Yeah, that's a key point there, right? In today's NFL, you often pass to set up the run, as opposed to the traditional pound them, pound them, pound them, and then play action, open up the passing game. Ultimately, I think it's about the offensive line. I think there's reasonable hope that they have made sufficient progress there. Right? Continuity in the offensive line matters. Now, if you have crappy players, you can have all the continuity in the world. They're still going to stink. But the Texans have a fair talent base. Did not mention earlier, what if just maybe, I think you treat it as found money, zero expectations on Kenyon Green, but if a first round draft pick a couple of years ago becomes a serviceable guard option, well, then that's a leap forward as well. So, you know, they have enough bets on the wheel that I don't think you're just wishing for a miracle that the offensive line is better in terms of the individual talent. And then if they can grow as a group during the course of the season. Mixon is a solid back, but he does not have the burst that Devin Singletary does. Mixon is a good pass catcher. I don't think he's a big needle mover, but like any back, he'll be better behind a better offensive line. You know, Mixon's not a guy who's going to do a whole lot of creation on his own. But I think they have a much better rounded talent base. And, you know, if Diggs plays nicely and gets where he fits in this offense, which be a plentiful role, but not the no doubt about it. Number one, feed him all he can eat at all times when you have Nico Collins. And as you mentioned, you get Tank Dell back and he stays healthy. Dalton Schultz, a good pass catching tight end. And then they took an ex Stroud teammate as the number two tight end, or at least to challenge Brevin Jordan for that role. It's a very interesting talent array. And while I don't know, the odds probably don't favor C.J. Stroud being as turnover-proof as he was as a rookie when he was incredible. But yeah, Overall, Stroud, through a year's experience, and if he has a better pocket and more overall weaponry, how is the needle not pointing in the right direction for the offense?
Well, let's talk about where this puts them in the overall picture. I don't think you've been a part of these conversations where we talked about Colin Cowherd in his way too early predictions, predicted the Texans to miss the playoffs this season, mainly because of the increase in difficulty of schedule. And he also thinks there's maybe a likelihood that CJ Stroud has some sort of sophomore slump, yada, yada, yada. That was before the Diggs deal, and that was before the draft. So maybe he would feel differently now. We have the benefit of seeing those things. But just for reference, he predicted Colts win the division. He thinks Jags have a better chance of getting the wild card. But with the additions of Mixon and Danielle Hunter and Diggs, and now we know who they've drafted, where do you see the Texans in this AFC South now?
All right, first on Colin Cowherd, tremendously successful show, but let's face it, in the opinion game, he'll talk out of both sides of his mouth.
Sure.
In consecutive weeks or a month or two later, I believe this adamantly. And then a week later, that's not really what I said, or I'm not going to maintain now. I believe 180 degrees the other way. The click game, the attention game, the listen to me, watch me, hate me or love me, but pay attention to me and all that sort of stuff. So I'm going to dismiss his individual opinion as he knows the Texans inside out. But sure, fallback is possible. You know, you don't necessarily go from really bad to good to great. The Texans are the proper favorite in the division. We've discussed before how the schedule is going to be markedly more difficult. But when you look within the AFC, the second place schedule, as opposed to the first place schedule, is playing Buffalo that much better a draw than playing Miami? Is playing Baltimore that much, or more difficult to draw rather? Is playing Baltimore that much worse a draw than playing Cleveland? Right. In the AFC West, yes, that the Texans play the Chiefs as opposed to Chargers or Raiders or Broncos. That's one where they clearly have it tougher than whoever turns out to be the alternate to winning through the AFC South to them. But The betting odds before the draft had the Texans as a solid favorite. Coming out, they have the Texans as a solid favorite. And as for the Colts, you know, this will be Anthony Richardson's rookie year. And he beat the Texans in his opener, and then a couple weeks later, a couple of injuries later, season's over. So if Anthony Richardson can approximate a C.J. Stroud-level rookie season, which I would bet against, frankly, but then the Colts may well go to the head of the class, right? Trevor Lawrence, I think, has been more hype than performance. He's solid,
yeah,
but he doesn't look special. Is there a leap in Trevor Lawrence that would then carry the Jaguars with him? Will Levis showed some nice things, but Tennessee's overall roster, I think they still look like a laggard. So, you know, I mean, it's not like the Texans are where the Chiefs are within the AFC West, where if the Chiefs don't win it, you'll be, what? But I think the Texans remain the proper favorite.
I think they should, and Vegas agrees with you as well. But after winning the division last year and then the offseason additions, Houston, quite frankly, has larger aspirations. And I think probably the more important question now is within the AFC, have they finally been able to leapfrog Baltimore after all these moves? What do you think?
That I will want to see on the field.
Yeah.
And significant additions for the Texans and roster turnover. The Ravens losing 3/5 of their offensive line. Well, they went out and addressed that with their draft class. And I just think there's reason to believe in Ravens' DNA until something really goes wrong with it, right? Lamar Jackson is healthy, his playoff hiccups aside over the regular season, and that the Ravens dismantled the Texans twice. I think the Texans have closed the gap. They nestle within the second tier of contenders now. But today, I would say Baltimore's still a better team.
They acquired Derrick Henry in legacy terms, has been a Texans killer. Most recently, not so much. Do you think Henry will be more effective behind that Baltimore line than he was behind that Titans line this past year?
The Titans line was a mess.
Yeah.
So along with all the tread wear off of Henry's tires through the heavy carry seasons, he's 30 now. I don't think he's going to make a run of 2,000 yards with Baltimore. But having Lamar Jackson as the other big component of their running game, you know, that has ooh and ah potential for Ravens fans. But if the thinking is that Henry is going to be just a super duper monster as he was for 3-4 seasons with the Titans, I'd take the under there. But within Baltimore's offense, they don't need that. And Gus Edwards did solid work there. Dobbins was all right before his injury. But, you know, if Henry's 80% of what he was at his peak, that's still better than 100% of what the Ravens have had a running back in the last couple of years. So and NFL money, 2 years, $20 million for him. I think the Ravens took a good value shot on Derrick Henry.
All right, let's end on a fun note for state pride. Have the Texans leapfrogged the Cowboys?
Well, who won a playoff game last year and who didn't? Granted, the Cowboys had the free pass into the divisional round before then losing at home. The Texans may be a better football team this season, but it might not reflect that in the record. The AFC is clearly more stacked with quality teams than the NFC. I mean, the Cowboys have the Eagles within their division, but the Giants, not good. The Commanders, not good. And then other than San Francisco in the conference, who are you thinking, well, they'd be considered a top two or three team if they were in the AFC? Detroit, perhaps. But I think that's about it. I guess at least for in-the-moment bragging rights, they can determine that on the field. Next big thing on the NFL calendar is the schedule release in a couple of weeks. How about the Texans and Cowboys in Arlington Thanksgiving Day?
I'm there for it, figuratively, not literally. That's going to be it for Texans on Tap. If you enjoyed the show, please remember to hit like on this video and subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't already. Charlie, Josh, and I will join you next week on our sister platform, Sports Map Houston. We'll do our normal Monday episode of Stone Cold Stros. So we invite everyone who's watching this, if you're an Astros fan, check us out there and give us a sub if you haven't already. For Charlie and Josh vacationing somewhere, go Texans.